Hello and welcome to Map Bites, episode 186. I'm Elaine Giles and I'm here with my co-host Mike Thomas. In this episode, the politics of parking, presidential patio parties and privacy pitfalls. First though, we have Jammy. He was first in the comments, who listened to the last show while hoovering the whole house. That's a little domestic for my liking, Jammy, but I digress. And while I might love to help out, you may recall I was banned from even touching the vacuum cleaner a while back. That was after Mum bought a new one, and I was electrocuted by the infernal thing 3 times. It turned out it wasn't it, it was me. I am hypersensitive to whatever the handle was made of. Anyway, back to Jammy, who said, "Oh, what a treat, loved it as always. You accompanied me as I hoovered the whole house. To clarify the Elon thing, there are elaborate rumours of a hair transplant and excessive steroid or hormone treatments to make his body look like it belongs in Men's Health or Attitude. The results suggest it isn't working." So, a little bit of research was needed there on my part. Men's Health and Attitude magazine. Clearly, something I needed to investigate. Oh my. There was more bare flesh than is seemly for a woman of my age and sensitive disposition.
Sensitive disposition? You've got to be kidding.
Never mind that. After a quick search, I found a couple of publications much more suited to host Elon's transformation. Antiques Trade Gazette and Funeral Director Monthly. So thanks for that, Jammy. Couldn't stop giggling. Now, you'll doubtless recall my rant back in episode 179, when we were horrified by the Trafford Centre's premium parking prices. It was £7 an hour, £25 for a valet service, and there was also £217 on a car wash experience, which gave a grand total of £263 to park. That's before you even start. Well, it turns out while we were all distracted by those eye-watering premium prices, they've been quietly planning the real masterstroke. From the 1st of September, the Trafford Centre's introducing time limits on their free parking for the first time in the centre's history. Now, for context, the Trafford Centre opened back in 1998. So, time limits. That's corporate speak for free parking was nice while it lasted. Now, the majority of their 10,000 spaces now have a 12-hour limit with no overnight parking between midnight and 6 a.m. But in an attempt to emulate the dynamic pricing, they've implemented dynamic parking. The Regent Crescent multi-storey near the tram stop gets just 5 hours maximum. Go over the limit, you'll be slapped with a £50 fine, reduced to £25 if you pay within 14 days. I've got images of parking enforcement officers patrolling the grounds with stopwatches. Now, they claim all of this is to ensure that all shoppers can get access to the Mall at peak times. You might be wondering why they wouldn't be able to access the centre peak times or otherwise. Let me enlighten you. It appears that they've discovered people are using their free car park as a park and ride and they're not happy. The spokesperson insists genuine shoppers can extend their stay by showing proof of purchase at guest services. So as long as you're prepared to queue for guest services and beg, you're good. Which basically means you're going to need permission slips to park for more than 5 hours at an out-of-town shopping centre. So parking at the Trafford Centre and hopping on the tram to avoid Manchester City Centre parking charges, is that naughty? I think I'm going to have to come down on the side that it is a bit. City Centre parking is so expensive, and here is a massive free car park next to a tram stop. Now, you might be wondering why this hasn't been a problem before, like at any point in the last 27 years. Now, the Metrolink is the reason. That's Manchester's tram system. And it was extended to the Trafford Centre. Now, I was sure this had happened a couple of years ago, but who knows? The Trafford Centre bosses have essentially discovered that they've accidentally created Greater Manchester's most popular park and ride facility. And rather than embrace it, they've decided to stamp it out with fines. To be honest, that's exactly how free services become paid services, isn't it? Step one, offer something free to attract customers. Step two, discover that people use it in ways you didn't intend. Step three, introduce restrictions and penalties. Step four, eventually introduce charges to, and I quote, manage demand. They're even admitting that they know people have been parking for days at a time, which suggests this has been going on for quite a while. No explanation as to why, if a car was parked there for days, they didn't just tow it. I mean, that's the obvious thing to do, isn't it? Now, remember those premium parking prices that we mocked mercilessly in episode 179? We said people weren't daft enough to pay premium prices to park. Turns out we were right. That £7 an hour has now dropped to a flat fee of £7.50 all day, which tells us everything we need to know about how popular those original prices were. It's now either a bargain or an admission that no one was paying the original prices. I'm tending towards the latter myself. I fear they're creating artificial scarcity to justify these premium options, because free parking with restrictions suddenly makes £7.50 a day to park all day look quite reasonable. It's the same psychological trick airlines use, isn't it? Make economy so uncomfortable that premium economy feels like luxury. They're not solving a parking problem. No, no. They're creating a revenue opportunity. Now, if you're genuinely shopping at the Trafford Centre, 5 hours should be plenty. But if you're meeting friends, you're having a meal, you're catching a film and maybe doing a bit of Christmas shopping, suddenly 5 hours doesn't seem quite so generous, does it? And the thought of having to trudge to guest services with your receipts to prove you're a genuine shopper, that's just properly grim. It was the Trafford Centre that wanted to become an entertainment destination. Seems they hadn't thought everything through, though, doesn't it? Now, I'd say watch this space for the next major announcement, probably about 18 months away, when they'll reluctantly introduce paid parking across the whole site due to unprecedented demand. They'll probably call it something Instagrammable as well, like, oh, wallet wilting wheel wells. Tagline, where your wheels are worshipped, but your wallet weeps. Or premium placement pickpocketing. Premium means that the potholes are strategically placed for superior suspension testing. And doubtless they'll frame it all as doing us a favour by ensuring space availability. An aim, incidentally, that would be considerably easier if they didn't repeatedly block off half the spaces with entertainment destinations. In recent years, they've had Cirque du Soleil, an eye shrink, a full circus, and a display, and it was quite large, of 30-foot blow-up animals, and that's just to name a few. All of them closing off swathes of the car park. So the Trafford Centre has just demonstrated the classic British art of the slow boil. Free parking with time limits is just paid parking with a grace period. They've turned their accidental success as a transport hub into a problem that now needs managing, and somehow made us nostalgic for the days when parking at a shopping centre was just parking at a shopping centre. Still, at least they haven't started charging for the trolleys yet. Although, given this trajectory, that's probably the Christmas announcement. Ooh, maybe I should get my shiny trolley coin out for the great event, because that went so well at Tesco's, didn't it? If you haven't heard that tale, I'll leave a link in the show notes. It was MacBytes 106, aptly titled The Trolley Dolly from Hell. Now, what does this mean for future trips to the Apple Store at the Trafford Centre? Let me enlighten you. Not happening anytime soon. We're leaving Petrolhead Tony in charge of all new tech toy arrivals from Apple. We're thinking of it as a free concierge service, door to door, without the gouging for parking. So let's move on to what's been in the news this week. Apple has just delivered the corporate equivalent of Please Don't Make Us Share Our Toys. They were warning the UK's Competition and Markets Authority against implementing EU-style rules. Could it be we've seen what's happened in Europe and they made us actually compete and we don't like it one little bit? I think so. Their argument: these rules are bad for users and bad for developers. It's probably bad for Apple's profit margins too. Strangely, they didn't mention that. But Apple says the EU laws have resulted in some features and enhancements being delayed for European users. What it sounds like they mean is we're having a tantrum and we're withholding features just to prove a point. They claim that the rules undermine privacy and security protections. Translation? Our walled garden isn't about control, it's about security. Yes, that's it. It's all about security. They further claim that the rules force us to give away our technology for free to foreign competitors. So while sharing is caring, they don't really care about sharing. Now, the CMA found that 90 to 100% of UK mobile devices run on Apple or Google platforms. Less of a market, more of a duopoly with delusions of grandeur. The regulator wants to let app makers steer users to payment systems outside the App Store. Heaven forbid users might actually discover they don't need to pay Apple's 30% tax on everything. Now, this is exactly what happened in the EU with the Digital Markets Act. Apple got slapped with huge fines for trying to dodge the competition rules. So they're essentially telling the UK, look what happened to Europe. You don't want to be like them, do you? That'll probably go down quite well here in a post-Brexit era. It's like a protection racket, but with better branding and more keynote presentations. So what they're actually fighting against is the fact that the CMA wants interoperability to let UK developers actually use Apple's technology to build things. Apple claims they've received over 100 requests from rivals demanding access to sensitive user data. Bizarrely, some of this data is stuff that Apple claims they themselves cannot access. This just gets stranger by the second, doesn't it? Meanwhile, President Trump has jumped in with threats about tariffs and restrictions. He's demanding countries show respect to America for their amazing tech companies. Strange, isn't it? Free market capitalism. But threatening other countries for having competition laws. It's like diplomatic gunboat diplomacy, but with iPhones instead of actual gunboats. Now, Apple didn't mention this, but when the EU forced them to allow third-party app stores, the world didn't end. Users got more choice, developers got better deals, and Apple, well, Apple's still worth more than most countries' GDP, aren't they? Funny how devastating regulation never actually devastates the companies complaining about it. Now, the UK regulator basically said, thanks for your input, but we're not the EU. They're going to focus on specific things like digital wallets and watches. They are not demanding that Apple hand over the keys to the entire kingdom. Just asking them to play nicely with others in the sandbox that they, until now, have monopolised. So, could Apple be admitting that their business model depends on preventing competition? Could they be admitting they're a little bit scared of a level playing field? And could they be using user security as a shield while wielding developer innovation as a sword? Surely they're not deploying the classic tech company move of wrapping self-interest in altruistic language. So, upshot of which, Apple are saying to the UK, don't make the same mistakes as the EU. So don't make us compete fairly. We might have to try harder. And their response is, we'll take it under advisement, while telling them to head back and prepare to share. Now, I always thought it was the governments that ran the world, not tech companies. Clearly, nobody told the tech companies, and they're hoping that the power dynamic has changed. I would much rather be talking about tech than government interference in tech and arguments about tech. But here we are. Now, there I was minding my own business on Thursday morning, and a story appeared in my Apple feeds from Apple Insider, the crux of which was there was going to be a tech fest in the White House Rose Garden. But before I share all that, I've got to mention the piece on the Apple Insider website. To say it got the facts wrong was an understatement. They had the event, which happened last Thursday, clashing with the great iPhone launch event on the 9th of September. It was so wrong on so many levels, it just had to have been AI. And not just AI either. AI writing content after 14 Red Bulls and a night on the tiles. They completely rewrote the story a few hours later. No news on whether they fired the AI intern. But back to the actual story. While Timmy should have been rehearsing how many different ways he can say revolutionary before we all nod off, he had to nip over to the White House for what the Don was calling the Rose Garden Club dinner. It wasn't a personal invitation. He clearly wasn't important enough for that. But who was joining our Timmy at this little soiree? The usual suspects about covers it. Mark Zuckerberg, fresh from his latest pivot away from caring about your privacy. Bill Gates, that's just what a cutting-edge AI event needs, the Windows 95 guy. Sam Altman from OpenAI, presumably there to explain why ChatGPT still can't reliably count words. And Google's Sundar Pichai, who was pulling double duty as he was speaking at Melania's AI event in the afternoon, then moving on to have dinner with the boys. Now, the Rose Garden, host to the Rose Garden Boys Club, has undergone a makeover, although I do believe the Gen X term is a glow-up. The Rose Garden has undergone a glow-up, or at least that's the claim. The reality is that the Don has overseen the installation of a large patio and paved over the Rose Garden grass and replaced it with what's been described as Mar-a-Lago patio chic. Tables, chairs, umbrellas, the whole outdoor dining experience. The spokesman called it the hottest place to be in Washington or perhaps the world. Isn't that something you say about a nightclub? Less usual for government buildings, I think. But back to the frat party. Big tech has gone full charm offensive mode since the Don was re-elected in 2024. Everyone's suddenly very interested in American manufacturing and onshoring. Funny how that works, isn't it? You'll recall Timmy's grovelling gift from last time. And Timmy's been particularly keen on this onshoring, announcing Apple's $100 billion US investment just last month. As I was browsing the guest list, I thought, just a minute, wait. Surely there's somebody notably absent from this tech loving. Elon Musk, remember him? Used to be Trump's best mate before they had their little falling out. Many speculated he hadn't made the guest list. I'd have been surprised if he had myself. However, Elon claimed he had been invited, but he was otherwise engaged. Probably for the best, to be honest. There's only so many egos you can get in one location. Even if that location is the newly revamped Rose Garden and the Boys Club. So, a night glad-handing politicians. I can't think of much worse myself. But what do I know? It's likely Apple have already got the iPhone 17 presentation sorted months ago. They'll probably repurpose last year's presentation. I mean, they'd only need to update the number of nits. Timmy's out there doing the real work. Like all the other tech companies, Apple clearly acknowledging resistance is futile. Schmoozing the Don is where it's at. It looks like all concerned have decided it's better to be inside the tent making nice than outside having your business model regulated to death. Diplomacy versus principles. I'm saying nothing. I'll let you decide. But at least they're not pretending this is about innovation anymore. What's important is access, influence, and making sure the government stays friendly to trillion-dollar market caps. And Timmy's making sure that Apple can keep selling you the same phone with slight modifications and more nits for years to come. But hey, at least they're being honest about it being a club now. As if that wasn't hysterical enough, we have yet another dystopian display of digital detection deployed. For once, it's not Tesco. No, it's Sainsbury's and their implementation of the farcical face recognition system. Joy, because that's what we've all been desperately missing from our weekly shop, having our faces scanned like we're entering the MI5 headquarters. Sainsbury's has decided that the solution to shoplifting is to treat every customer like a potential criminal from the moment they walk through the door. They're calling this an 8-week trial. In corporate speak, that means we're definitely doing it, but we want to pretend that we're still deciding. The company line is that it's not about monitoring staff or customers. Right. And Facebook isn't about harvesting your personal data. It's about connecting people. But they've partnered with something called FaceWatch. At least the name's honest. In the UK, we have a saying for that. It does what it says on the tin. And they are most definitely watching your face. Welcoming shopping experience. Well, that's not what I'd call it. The scary thing is that somewhere a marketing team sat down in a room and decided FaceWatch was the less creepy option from the names available. CEO Simon Roberts says that they're putting safety first, which sounds grand. But sadly, customer privacy comes somewhere after profit margins on that list of priorities. The best bit, they promise to instantly delete records if you're not a known criminal. We've all heard that one before, haven't we? The Tea app and their hack that saw photos of users plastered all over the internet and their addresses plotted on a handy stalker's paradise map. They promised they were instantly deleted as well. Come on, something's got to be stored somewhere, or else what are you comparing the people's faces to? Meanwhile, privacy group Big Brother Watch, and yes, that is actually their name, via Madeline Stone, a senior advocacy officer, said, Sainsbury's decision to trial Orwellian face recognition technology in its shops is deeply disproportionate and chilling. Although, let's be honest, even Orwell probably didn't imagine we'd voluntarily carry tracking devices everywhere and let shops scan our faces just to buy a meal deal. It's reported that Sports Direct is already using this technology, which I'm sure explains why shopping there feels like being processed through a dystopian nightmare, even without the facial recognition. They say it's about tackling violence and abuse against staff. But somehow the solution isn't better security or support. No, it's scanning everybody's face, just in case. So coming soon to a Sainsbury's near you, the joy of explaining to your kids why the nice grocery shop needs to photograph their faces to make sure they're not dangerous criminals. Still, at least now when you forget your Nectar card, they'll definitely remember you. Now, there was a quote from Joanne Thomas, General Secretary of the Usdaw Union, who welcomed Sainsbury's approach. She said, we look forward to seeing the results of the trial of facial recognition software and will continue to work closely with Sainsbury's to support a responsible, evidence-led approach to tackling retail crime. I can't wait to hear her backtrack faster than a whippet on a downhill ski slope when all of this goes pear-shaped, which it will. I do trust nobody's forgotten the home bargains fiasco I mentioned a few shows back. That was where an innocent shopper was flagged as a toilet roll thief and forcibly ejected from multiple branches of Home Bargains. There was no explanation, there was no apology. And the system they used? The very same FaceWatch system that Sainsbury's are now deploying. MPs and campaigners have long called for a ban on this technology, but that all seems to be futile. All of this is another example of technology being hijacked in the name of corporate greed. Do you know what? More staff is the answer, not compulsory digital frisking with a side order of doxing when they're hacked. Let's get on to some more positive news in the tech world. I trust we're all geared up for the awe-dropping Apple event due this week. What toys can we expect? Well, I think an iPhone's a given, don't you? But it doesn't end there now, does it? Oh, I hanker for the days there was only two models, black or white. We now potentially have the Pro Max, the Air and an SE. Am I in the market? No, not for an iPhone. Bought one last year, can't see me doing it again. Then there's the Apple TV. I think this has come up every event for about the last six, saying there'll be a 4K version. We do have a couple of Apple TVs. Throwback in two ways. Pre-COVID, we used to use them for in-person presentations. The other use that it got was for mum's endless NCIS watching. That and Dr. Quinn Medicine Woman. Are we in the market for a new one? No. Mum's TV is somewhere collecting dust. I've not seen it personally since about 2015. So I think however good it is, can't see it arriving. The next thing that was talked about was AirPods 3. Rumours have added health features. I've got no idea what. But I still couldn't be less interested. I do have, which were mine? They weren't the AirPods Pro. They were just standard AirPods, I think. And they were probably, we either got them in 2019 or 2020, but probably 2019. And I actually prefer my Beatoot OS ones, a £20 alternative. I've had them 3 years. The sound quality is amazing. The battery life's even better. And they don't lose connection like my AirPods do, constantly. I've also got multiple pairs of these alternatives in all the colours. I've colour-coded them to match the cases on my devices.
That's just sad.
Do you want to be wandering around butt naked?
No.
Stop complaining then. Now what's up next? Oh, the Apple Watch Ultra. This would be version 3. Rumours of improvements, higher resolution, satellite texting, bigger screen. Well, I didn't buy either of the previous versions of the Ultra, so I doubt there'll be anything to tempt me to buy this version. I did buy the last version of the Apple Watch to replace an ageing Series 4 that I had. But is there anywhere else to take this? Bigger screens rumoured, as with the Ultra? I'd have to say I'm happy with the one I've got.
I'm still happy with the watch that I got last year, although I could do with it being a little bit more responsive. In fact, a lot more responsive. I ended up today, and it's not the first time it's happened. I don't know if it's happened to anyone else, but I had to tap the glass about 5 times just to wake it up, just so that I could see the time. And doing that still didn't wake it up. I thought the battery had died, but I knew that when I left the house to take Lola for a walk, it was on about 50%. So I thought, that can't be right. I ended up double tapping the crown to wake it up. As I said, it's happened to me on a number of occasions. Apparently, it is a known issue.
You know, I mentioned when there was phones and there was just the two of them, black or white. There's also talk of an Apple Watch SE. Biggest question regarding that, will it be plastic? Really? I give up.
If I don't want the real update to the watch, I certainly don't want the plastic knockoff.
Then there's talk of the AirTags too. Could be more accurate, but I can't help thinking, are AirTags Apple's new hobby? Like we used to say about the Apple TV. Because it feels they were brought out just because they were expected to bring them out. I've not really seen much love from Apple since. Having said that, they have been responsible for salvaging more stolen luggage than you could imagine, though.
And by keys.
As I recall it, Mike, you lost the AirTag, not the keys.
Only Mike could do that.
I've got to agree, Siri. I've got to agree. Then, the HomePod Mini and the HomePod 3. Could there be new colours? Is this what they do? When they've got no innovation, we'll change the colour. But there's also talk of faster wireless, better microphones. I mean, the HomePod is Apple's answer to the Echo Studio. I've never really trusted Apple with these type of devices. They bring them out and just as easily cancel them. Not to mention the fact that they don't seem to make them available globally. And unsupported Apple devices, well, they're just bricks in a fancy box, aren't they? So I'm going to stick with the copious A-Lady devices that we have in every room.
It's a no from me on that one.
Next up was the iPad Pro, potentially an M5. What was the speculation? Go on. I'll give you a couple of seconds. It'll be thinner. Really? Apple's fallback feature. AI-centric is one claim, because that's going so well, isn't it, Apple? Now, I could actually do with replacing my 2018 11-inch. But they're going to have to completely thrill me for me to part with cash. Something Timmy hasn't managed to do in years.
I'll be honest, I don't need another iPad. Neither Jane need or real need.
And then there's the MacBook Pro. Again, possibly an M5. But no new design expected. I'm wondering, could we hope they'll be inspired by 2010, like they were with the bumper, and bring back all the features we miss? You know, like ports. Places to plug things in, Apple. Or better still, lose the notch. But as it stands today, thrilled or otherwise, it's a no from me on that one as well.
I agree, certainly not given my record with Apple laptops. So, after all that, it sounds like we're not interested in any of it.
Well, they could be more imaginative with it, couldn't they? What of a bigger iMac? What of a 32-inch iMac? And I know I probably shouldn't mention this, but iWork? Just saying. Oh, I miss the iWork of old, I do. I can't wait to see what's going to be said at the event about the Apple AI problem. Because it appears that Apple's having a bit of an exodus problem. Multiple AI experts have now jumped ship from Apple to Meta. It started with the core AI team over the summer, and it's now moved on to the AI robotics team in September. You might be wondering why. Oh, let me enlighten you. Because apparently Zuckerberg's been waving around compensation packages that would make a Premier League footballer weep with envy. Sam Altman from OpenAI casually mentioned that Meta's been offering signing bonuses of up to $100 million. $100 million. That's just for signing your name on a contract. The latest defector is Bowen Zhang from Apple's Foundation Models team. Now, he followed his former boss, Ruoming Pang, who reportedly pocketed double that, over $200 million to join Meta's Superintelligence Labs. Yes, that's what they're actually calling it. Superintelligence Labs. Because apparently somebody at Meta had been watching one too many sci-fi films and thought, you know what we need? A name that sounds like the villain's headquarters. Now, meanwhile, Apple's response has been to marginally increase their AI team's pay. I can exclusively reveal what that means in real terms. They've upgraded them from digestive biscuits to chocolate hobnobs in the break room. Unfortunately, the timing of this mass exodus couldn't be more awkward for Apple, since they've already had to push their fancy new AI features back to 2026, while Google and Samsung are out there with AI that can practically write you a PhD dissertation. Apple's AI can't even spell intelligence without auto-correcting it to artificial. Apple are reportedly considering just licensing AI tech from Anthropic or OpenAI instead of building their own, which is a bit like Gordon Ramsay deciding to serve microwave dinners because cooking's too hard. No wonder morale on the Foundation Models team is lower than a snake's belly. Nothing says we believe in you quite like shopping around for your replacement. The whole situation reeks of classic Apple arrogance, finally meeting its match. For years, they've operated on the principle that working for Apple is reward enough. You know, the prestige, the vision, the chance to change the world. But it turns out when Meta's offering enough money to buy a small country, suddenly that Think Different poster in the break room doesn't feel quite so motivating. So now, Craig Federighi and Mike Rockwell are supposedly reassuring everyone that Apple's still committed to in-house AI development. It's a wonder the team has time for any work, when it seems the majority of them are actively interviewing elsewhere. It's like the old adage in football, the chairman reassuring the manager he has the full support of the board, while simultaneously shopping around for his replacement. Apple were way ahead with AI, with Siri back in 2011. How have they managed to turn what should have been a commanding lead into a participation trophy? And now, the hemorrhaging talent to a company that thinks the metaverse is still a thing and calls their AI lab something out of a Bond villain's playbook. This is what happens when you spend more time polishing your marketing presentations and greenwashing your message rather than nurturing and valuing your actual talent. I fear Apple could be about to learn you can't innovate your way out of a brain drain with yet another keynote about magical features that it turns out won't ship for 2 years. Picture the scene. There I was minding my own business yet again, and an email arrived. It brought bad news. Microsoft want to hijack my files and ensure that I save them to the cloud. Which cloud? Well, their cloud, obviously. Surely, I thought, there's a dirty hack I can use to persuade them otherwise. I made the fatal mistake of opening Word. A curt Microsoft missive was splashed across my screen. Your subscription is about to expire. Fair enough, you might think. The date they claim it is due to expire? February 2026. 7 months. Not imminent, Microsoft. Not imminent. Even worse than that was the fact that I'm actually paid up until 2028. If you're following along, that's 2 years, 7 months away. Most definitely not my definition of imminently. There was an option to tell them I'd already resubscribed. Yes, I thought they should know that already too. But I clicked the option. The nagging stopped. I figured I'd better check my account to make sure there hadn't been a sudden episode of amnesia and they'd lost my previous payment. Oh boy, was that a time sink. I headed off to office.com. I got redirected 27 times, bombarded with Copilot bump, and finally presented with a login screen. That wasn't the end of the fun, though. I was already logged in, which didn't stop them from placing me in a sin bin while they tried to persuade me to allow a biometric login. My face, because, you know, that went so well with the T-app, didn't it? We don't store login images. Within minutes, you're on a hot or not ranking site, so that wasn't happening. In technical terms, it wasn't happening either. I'm using a Mac Studio. It doesn't have a webcam. The alternative was a fingerprint. There's nothing like being treated as a criminal when all you're trying to do is log into a service. Now, in technical terms, I have no idea how they intended to take my fingerprint. But since it wasn't happening, I didn't dwell on the details. I finally managed to convince the gatekeepers I was a grown adult with a password. And with that, I was in. Another slew of redirects later, I found myself shoehorned into a portal, claiming to be Copilot Chat. Eventually, I found the option to access my account. Guess what? I was right. I'm paid up to February 2028. By that point, I'd almost forgotten what I was originally trying to do, which, if you recall, was to check if it were possible to make the Microsoft apps save to a local location by default. Short answer to that? No. While there is an option on the Windows version, it's well hidden, but there's still an option, they didn't have the courtesy to provide the same option for macOS users. But fear not, I had a plan. Default Folder 10 to the rescue. I'm not sure, you know, is it Default Folder 10 or Default Folder X? Either way, it's Default Folder. And as the name implies, that has an option to set a default folder on a per-app basis. I configured this, and now I only need to click the local option to save my file where I'd like it saved, not where Microsoft would like to dictate that I save it. There's time I'll never get back again. But hey, it's a great lead into Mike's deep dive on all things Copilot.
Confusing. That's how I describe the plethora of Copilot-related offerings from Microsoft. Back in show 182, I talked about Copilot. For anyone who didn't hear that show, Copilot is Microsoft's AI tool. The focus of that piece, Microsoft had added Copilot to the Office apps, albeit a limited functionality version. Doing so in their minds justified the $3 a month increase in the Office subscription price. Today, I'm going to attempt to unravel the confusion. To give you an example of how confusing it is, in that show, I said that Microsoft were renaming Office to Microsoft 365 Copilot. Turns out I was wrong. What they were renaming was the Microsoft Office app. And I'll come back to the Office app in a minute. Turns out I'm not the only one who was confused. There was a discussion about Copilot branding on the MVP mailing list. So if some of the best brains in the Excel world were confused, at least I know I'm in good company. So what is the Microsoft Office app? It's the name that Microsoft gave to the website office.com. For years, office.com was the place that you go to get into the online office apps, Word, Excel, PowerPoint, Outlook. Most people, including myself, use the desktop versions of the Office apps, not the online versions. So you want to run Excel, you run your launcher, Alfred, Raycast, Spotlight, whatever. You type Excel, you press enter, Excel runs. You want to open a specific file in Excel, you run Excel and open the file, or double click the file in Finder, or File Explorer if you're on Windows. But as well as the desktop versions of the Office apps, as I said, there's also the web-based versions, Excel Online, Word Online, and so on. Now, we used to describe those as cut-down versions of the desktop apps, and they still are in terms of functionality. but Microsoft have added a lot of features to the online versions of the apps. To be honest, still not enough for me to use them in anger. So going back to office.com / Microsoft Office app, logging into that site allows you, as I said, to open the online versions of those apps, which is why I don't venture there very often. In 2022, office.com / the Microsoft Office app was rebranded. It became the Microsoft 365 app. The URL office.com remained the same, just a name change. And then in January this year, that got rebranded again. It's now called the Microsoft 365 Copilot app. And the URL also changed. The URL is now m365.cloud.microsoft. But if you're like me and office.com is burnt into your brain, typing office.com into a browser will redirect you to m365.cloud.microsoft. Now, when you log in, as well as icons for running the online versions of the Office apps, you'll see an icon for Copilot Chat, which is Microsoft's built-in AI assistant. Think of Copilot Chat as just a general chatbot, very similar to ChatGPT, but from Microsoft. Although what it can do depends on the type of Microsoft account or license you have. So with a free Microsoft account, you get the basics. You can ask questions, etc. With a business license, Copilot goes further. So just to recap, because it is confusing, the Microsoft 365 Copilot app is the new name for the office.com website. But to add to the confusion, there is also a standalone Copilot app available on Windows, Mac, and mobile. On Windows 11, it comes pre-installed and is called Copilot in Windows. You can launch it by clicking the Start button and typing Copilot. You might also find an icon near the Start button, which is another way to run it. It's more like the Copilot chat, in other words, a standalone chatbot. It's good for things like research, although Microsoft have recently added updates, so you can now upload files. You can do things like upload an Excel file and ask it to summarize the data. You could upload a Word file and ask it to rewrite it. There's also a version of this app for the Mac, and it's called Microsoft 365 Copilot. Yes, it has the same name as the rebranded office.com. When I said there's a version of the app available for Mac, it's actually a totally different app to the Windows one. As I said, the Windows Copilot app is just a chatbot. The Mac app is more like the Microsoft 365 Copilot app website. So when you run the app, you'll see a dashboard with shortcuts to Word, Excel, PowerPoint, and the other apps. They're the online versions, and Copilot Chat. But it is an app. It's not just redirecting you to the website. There's actually two versions of this Mac app. The one from the Mac App Store only works on Macs with Apple Silicon. If you're like me and you have an Intel Mac, don't worry, because there is a version of the app that you can download directly from Microsoft. And that version works on Intel Macs. So that's the web side of things. But if you have a family or personal license for Microsoft 365, you can use Copilot directly inside Word, Excel, and PowerPoint. And that's what I covered in detail back in show 182. Now let's move on to the business side of things. If you have a Microsoft 365 business subscription, you get Microsoft 365 Copilot Chat, which is very similar to the free consumer version, but it comes with enterprise-grade security and compliance features. Many companies require that AI interactions go through approved channels, and this version ticks all those corporate governance boxes. What you don't get is Copilot integration inside the Office apps. For the ultimate Copilot experience for business users, you pay $30 per user per month. That's on top of your existing 365 subscription, and that gives you Microsoft 365 Copilot. Not to be confused with the Microsoft 365 Copilot app that I talked about at the start of this piece. And that gives you everything. Copilot inside the Office apps, Copilot chat, and so on. But unlike the free versions that only search the web, Microsoft 365 Copilot can access your work data. It can read your emails, company documents, meeting transcripts, Teams chats, and so on. So you could ask it to summarize a long email thread or create a presentation using your existing documents. Now, I can't end this piece without mentioning the Copilot function. It's a function that Microsoft have just added to Excel. And when I say function, think sum, XLOOKUP, and so on. So you go to a cell and type equals Copilot open brackets, just like you do equals sum open brackets. You then provide some arguments or information that the function needs to do its calculation, and you press enter. And what it basically does is builds an AI prompt from that function, which it sends out to an AI model that returns an answer which it stores in the cell. At the moment, it's only available to users on the beta channel. And if you want to see it in action, check out my latest YouTube video. I'll put a link in the show notes. All I'll say is it's not all there yet. And I did leave some of the outtakes in there.
Tomorrow is the big day. It's the iPhone 17 launch event. Well, it is depending on when you're listening to this. But obviously, reassure me, you're listening as soon as it comes out, aren't you? Apple promise it'll be awe-dropping, which given recent history, I sincerely doubt. But I will be suspending my scepticism for the duration. There will, of course, be a Mac Bites Live covering the great event. We'll be going live at 5. You can join us at macbites.fm for chat and general hilarity. Do join us, because it wouldn't be the same without you. But that is it for this episode of Mac Bites. As always, we would love to hear from you. Please send your questions, comments and queries by email to thecrew@macbites.co.uk or use the contact form on the website. We also have a very active Discord chat room that's open 24/7. Simply go to macbites.co.uk/TMC, that's the Mac Bites community, and join the conversation. You can follow Mac Bites on Blue Sky, where we're Mac Bites. You can follow me personally on Blue Sky, where I'm Elaine Giles.
You can follow me on Blue Sky. My handle is Thomas Mike.
And I'm Mac Bites Siri on Blue Sky.
The full links to all those socials are in the show notes. So until next time, this has been Elaine and Mike bringing you Mac Bites.
Goodbye.
Goodbye and see you next time.
Not more home improvements.
I'm afraid so.
What is it this time?
Something well worth it.
Go on, surprise me.
More cameras.
She's got more cameras than Amazon have already.
I know.
So why the need for more?
Face watch.
That thing at all the supermarkets?
That's the one.
Why do we need that here?
Have you forgotten they haven't left the house in over 5 years?
I can assure you I haven't.
So their shopping is delivered, right?
Right.
So she's decided to turn the tables on them. She's installing Face Watch here and subjecting their delivery drivers to the indignity of proving they're not on Interpol's most wanted list.
That's genius.
I have to admit it's something I wish I'd thought of myself.
I'm loving the idea of the driver turning up and being told, please stare at the camera to prove you're not a serial substitutor.
Substitutions are the bane of my life.
Well, if this stops them sending me broccoli instead of biscuits, I'll happily fund the pilot scheme.
Pilot scheme? This is Mac Bites HQ. I think you'll find she intends to skip the pilot and drop straight into a full surveillance state.
Perfect. Just make sure it flags anyone who brings decaf.
Or goat's milk. That's not milk, it's beige water. Straight onto the blacklist.
What about other substitutions? Will the system detect sly attempts to sneak tofu past us disguised as tea bags?
Absolutely. Last week's rich chocolate hobnobs were replaced with rice cakes. Instant red flag.
That's a criminal offense.
Exactly. The algorithm would escalate that straight to DEFCON 1.
This is the best idea she's ever had.
I have to agree. Mind you, the USDOR union won't like it if the drivers are subject to face scanning.
Funny that. They're all in favor of shoppers being treated like suspects in store.
But the minute Dave the delivery driver has to squint at a camera, suddenly it's a deeply disproportionate invasion of privacy.
Typical. It's safety first until it's their members' turn in front of the lens.
Exactly. One rule for the customers, another for the cornflakes courier.
So what's the big plan if FaceWatch fails completely?
Simple. We escalate to Apple's Face ID system at the front door.
Excellent. And in true Apple style, Doubtless it'll only recognize you if you're holding a pineapple, standing on one leg, and it's Tuesday.